This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so orient, makes you so sick at heart. But you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you got it.
Rest! You tell them I'm coming!
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We have a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we already were.
It is again time for the new American Dream radio show. The American Russian novel, All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the wind of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, the tortured tundra. What we must have is a new American dream where we're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream, not of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. A new America, the real hope of the world. Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hand with a warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Beautiful dreamer, wake unto me. Starlight and dewdrops are waiting for thee. Sounds of the rude world heard in the day, lulled by the moonlight, have all passed away. Beautiful dreamer, queen of my song, list while I woo thee with sweet melody. Gone are the cares of life's busy throng. Beautiful dreamer, awake unto me. Beautiful dreamer, awake unto me. All right, I just thought I'd bring you a little little something there. My first guest tonight
is Richard Flamer from the Catholic Worker Farm in Chiapas, Mexico. He joins me once a month, and it's always a pleasure to speak to him. We recorded the interview earlier because of some potential weather problems down there. So here we go.
Yep, it's me.
All right. Very good, Richard. All right, then.
I had a few remarks. This time, I didn't write much, but most of it would be off the cuff.
Okay.
A common trope amongst Catholic worker communities is Catholic workers are neither Catholic nor workers.
Huh.
I, of course, am included in this ragamuffin group of volunteers.
Okay.
Who try to live out the works of mercy cited in the Beatitudes.
Mm.
We, or at least I, often fail in our service. How often have I passed by those who could have used my help? Mm. How often have I made a judgment I regretted? I do, however, hang out with the sinners. I don't walk on water, but I have made sail on rough seas, praying for calmer waters.
Hmm.
I drove a school bus towing a four-wheel drive through Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador to my sister's sport fishing marina in Costa Rica.
Huh.
Since the above vehicles were stamped in my passport, I either had to pay import taxes or take the two out of Costa Rica when I left.
Hmm.
I picked a third option. I set out from the marina early one morning in a dugout canoe with an outboard motor. Huh. The pilot was a young surfer dude who brought along an ice chest full of beer and two bottles of water for me. The other 18 cans were beer for him. when we first set out, the Pacific was calm. After an hour of motoring north along the coast, the swells became rough. At one point, they reached 7 to 8 foot tall. And, of course, we're in a dugout canoe. Roughly 3 miles from the Nicaraguan border, we had to turn back to the marina. The following morning, I hopped a ride to the border and started making my rounds at the various restaurants and stores inside of the borderline. I found a small group of Ecuadorans, including two women with children, at a Palapa restaurant. Talking with the owner, he told me to take a hammock and wait, and I could cross with them in a manner clandestine. At 3 a.m., I was awakened by one of my guides. We gathered, set off walking, climbing barbed wire fences, etc. By 5:30, I was led to a small hillside on the main road in Nicaragua. Actually, it was the Pan American Highway. Daybreak came, I walked half a mile south and checked in with the Nicaraguan immigration. The agent who checked me in asked who had led me past the checkpoint because the other side wasn't opened up yet, the Costa Rican side. Nicaraguan soldiers, I explained. He laughed and told me one of the guides was his son. On my behalf, I might add that in the 6 years I lived at the Des Moines Catholic Worker, I did a lot of construction and reconstruction. After Des Moines, I visited a dozen other workers, sometimes doing construction, other times at least washing dishes. I usually got on well with the down and out. I've had my share of problems with the sons and daughters of the middle class, especially those young folks who have gone to college and knew all the answers. I worked hard along the way to rid myself, or at least recognize my sins. My prejudices surfaced from time to time, but as I read more and tried to mature, I softened my tone, and I learned how to pray. Mm-hmm. Lord, bless all those who annoy me, and let me learn to love all creatures.
Mm. Wow.
Yep. Trying to follow the Beatitudes is not an easy thing.
Yeah, right.
But I keep struggling.
I am continually impressed with your dedication to everything, to helping people, to things, to the Beatitudes, you know, to the teachings of our Lord. You exhibit a dedication and a passion that are, they're just beyond what I can imagine having myself, and it's humbling.
Nah. The truth of the matter is, I'm just another sinner. And the good news is that as I've aged, I've become much more tolerant, but I still have all these inborn prejudices and the idea of the fact that I can't do much work here anymore. I found out I have a torn rotator cuff, which makes it really hard to do the carpentry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A friend
of mine here is going through that kind of an issue, and it's horribly painful. I'm sure yours is, too.
I try to ignore it, but
we all try to do with pain, right? It's easier said than done.
But as it turns out, at the VA hospital in Des Moines, which is just wonderful. They're
really
so great there. Yeah, and the physical therapist told me, look, you have two choices: surgery or exercises.
Huh.
Said, give me the exercises.
Yeah, right.
So I'm doing the exercises every day, and I can feel it's getting a little better. But it'll never be back to where it was, and that's okay. You know, I'm like my buddy Ed Bloomer always says, getting old ain't for sissies.
Yeah, right. but of course the corollary is that it beats the alternative, right?
Yeah.
Well.
So that's it for this week, this month. Hopefully I'm still thinking about writing. Now that I'm not in the wood shop, I have more time.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about writing a small book, and I'm not sure yet. Maybe it's kind of fiction and non together.
Okay.
About my travels.
Yeah.
And certainly had my share of adventures along the way.
Absolutely. I bet that would be a fascinating book.
Although I got to say, I always wonder how I've managed to live this long.
Yeah, right.
But that's all right. I'm still kicking.
Mm-hmm. Well, keep
Chuck,
it up.
As always, as always, take care.
Thanks so much, Richard. And
you bet.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Okay. And to you as well. Take
okay.
care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A very nice message from Richard Flamer. A little short, but it was very nice. All right. Next guest is another Catholic worker. This one from Des Moines. It's Frank Cordero, who joins me every week. And here are his thoughts for today.
Hi, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm just now going out the back door.
Okay.
Of a dear friend I went to grade school and high school with.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, he was the pitcher. I was the catcher.
Cool.
Our fathers both fought in World War II, Italians from the south side.
So now
I'm outside.
Okay.
And I'm getting in my car, and I'll be able to talk to you because I've been looking forward to sharing. But the weather is the story here at the moment. We're all bracing for what another real blistering winter effort with a lot of wet snow, and that's supposed to be coming tomorrow.
Huh.
But today, you think we're in the middle of spring or something, which is always a bad sign in January because you know something else is coming harder.
Yeah, right.
So I'm also trying to. All right. So anyway, the bad news is we have a person in our community who has COVID.
Uh-oh.
Araceli. Yeah.
Araceli.
Yeah. And so she's isolated. And of course, she's been vaccinated and all that. But we had to shut down the house.
Oh.
And we're all trying to keep ourselves self-quarantine where we're at.
Right.
Until we all get tested. That's the, all right here.
Protocol?
I'm out here. That is the protocol.
Okay.
Yeah. What I'm looking for here right now as I'm interrupting our call is the perennial, where did I put the keys? that old men go through.
Well, I hope you didn't put them in one of those safe places that you never can find anything.
No, I got them.
All right. Good.
I got a leather jacket that's got multiple options. So
oh, yeah.
That always throws me.
Right.
So, all right. So, but I now have time to talk to you, and I wanted to say that I got a call from Jess, and she's doing I would say she's doing well because she's sounds like she's more comfortable in the space she's in.
Mm-hmm.
It's still in a COVID scene, and it's still very restrictive. Mm. And people are ouchy about that.
Mm.
However, she's attracted to a new friend. She says that she'd like to get to know, and she's one of the friend that she says is the one of the strangest people on the block. and she's known by everyone by the lady who cut her husband's head off.
Oh,
and I just. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
And I paused, and then I said, wow, that's interesting. And then I told Jess, you know, I'm not surprised, because strange people attract each other in the BOP.
Right.
And she laughed. And then she says, yeah, the woman's been here for 25 years.
Oh.
And she's one of the best, well-read, well-thinking, put-together human being, in the site.
Huh.
So it's, and then I'm going like, you know, and that I know exactly what she's talking about because, you know, you meet some of the most interesting people on the planet who are in prison. It's just the, and then I'm reminded, of course, that almost everybody in, who've written in our New Testament, have been in prison. A prison is a place where, the mantle of a human being is tried, and it's amazing the people who, how people come out of it. Some people really do come out of it in a, as individuals, better human beings.
Really?
Oh, heck yes. Now the thing you need to know is that the, some people think that they went to jail and jail saved them. Well, you know, whatever that means, I don't buy that. What I buy is that if you got saved in jail, you got saved despite being in jail.
Right.
And that's, I'd say the same thing with Jesus, because if we don't, he's just a masochist. Just trying to find himself on a cross so he can appease some kind of a vengeful father. No thanks. Not down to buy that story. All that being said, I did want to talk about the Eucharist. And, I was brought to my attention. I wrote a email to a younger person. Everybody's younger when you're 70 in the movement. I'm starting a Catholic worker in Milwaukee. And she's a, and I wrote and it's one of those things in which, she's going to be a paid, staff person to person a house, for women. And they have a board and all that's really good work, but it's, and this is the but, it's like, it's a stretch. It's thin ice to call yourself a Catholic worker and be doing the work on those premises of, tax deduction, corporate board, and salary person. I'm just saying it. I didn't say it couldn't be done. I said, but then what do you do with the issues like, Dorothy Day's, and the Catholic workers' pacifism and its resistance to empire? And then she wrote back and said, I struggle with the pacifism thing. He says, but I take affront at the Catholic workers who don't go to Eucharist every day because Dorothy Day, the Eucharist says the Eucharist is, a daily thing, mandatory culture. And I'm sure Dorothy said it. I'm sure it was for her. But you know, I'm reminded like, look, I love the Eucharist too. I'm no small hitter in this scene of the Eucharist. It's a major part of my life.
Right.
I was a priest. I was called to be a priest. I have strong urges for the Eucharist, and I'm right now. We're doing a very pathetic poultry Eucharist every Saturday. It's me and Eddie and Norman and Austin. And bread and wine and, the lectionary, you know, and, I'm fed by that Eucharist. Catholic too. The point I was trying to make is the woman was trying to say that only the ordained priest, can do it. And I'm going like, that might have been true in Dorothy's day. I don't doubt it. But this, Dorothy Day isn't a saint because of her Catholicity and being a traditional Catholic. She's a saint because she resisted the empire. And,
right.
I mean, we got lots of saints that, fed the poor. Francis fed the poor. And I know we do too, but that's not all we do.
Let me ask you a couple things about the Eucharist, you know, and your practice. At what we have been doing at St. Mark's, we have the Eucharist every Sunday, but there was a mandate from our bishop that, because of COVID, we do not offer the wine to everyone. One person, you know, either the priest who is performing it, or one designated parishioner, sometimes, gets to take the wine for everyone. Then the bread is passed out in, it's in prepackaged wafers, which we put in, a bowl, up in front. And so as people come up, they grab a wafer and take it back to their pew and consume it there. So I was interested. It sounded as though you, your small group actually has both the bread and the wine. Is this, has there been an effect because of COVID?
Well, let me speak to our group.
Okay.
three of the four of us all live in the same house, and the odd guy out lives in another house in our community. So we're always around each other. We live with each other.
Right.
So does your Episcopal church live with each other?
No. Right. So it's because of your continued exposure to each other that you do it this way then.
No, we really have, we think about it. Sometimes we wear masks, sometimes, and you're right. Wait a minute, we've all been vaccinated, so we went to the CC guidelines, blah, 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 and if you're in a household with less than five, blah, 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 we bought that, but man, that's changing all the time.
I know.
So, and the issue again is, and it's tragic, and I wish we weren't in the virus scene, because at the Roman Catholic Church, gets bent out of shape about, what you put in the wafer. That's really silly. All of that discussion is silly. However, all of it's been overlapped and overwhelmed because we're people of science, that, the Eucharist is a, and it's a tragic thing that this disease strikes at the heart of the, of conspiratorial work. Because conspiratorial work is at the heart of being Christian. Sharing the body of Christ is sharing the conspiracy, breathing the same conspiracy of love. Hmm. So it's a direct thing on the disease is a direct attack on the venue, the site, what do you call it? The staging place, for the rite of Eucharist. So until we can get our shit together and be able to eat with each other a meal of conspiratorial love and not think we're killing each other, you know, I'd like to revisit this discussion, but I'm not sure that answered much of your question, but.
Well, it kind of did, and it's just interesting to look at the different perspectives. Because clearly, the Eucharist is very important both to the Roman Catholic and to the Episcopalian, and I was just intrigued to hear how things might be handled differently.
It's a good question, and I I'm really a Eucharistic freak too, and I would like to speak a bit of many times and lots of sides to it. And this woman saying that email to me saying like, you gotta go to daily mass or you're not Catholic. I'm going like, oh, hon, you don't even understand. So that's kind of what I feel. When I say hon, I'm being really probably bad. I think she's like 45 or 50. or maybe younger. I don't know. I mean, I'm terrible on that, but I have never met her. This is an email thing. So it's just that, and no one's listening to this show, so what the hell? and you're my confessor primate, so there you have
all
it.
Right,
all right, Chuck. we should cut this off before it gets ridiculous, if I haven't already done that.
Yeah, no, we're not ridiculous at all. I'm glad that you got a chance to talk to Jess. I know that that must have helped your, mental composure a little bit.
You just it's just the pressure to not know what's going on. So I know she's all right, and she's just thriving in a sense. that can happen there. And I know that. So that's good stuff. That's really good stuff. Yeah. All right, friend. God bless.
God bless. Thank you so much, Brick. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A very thoughtful interview with Frank Cordero from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. I'd like to remind you that you're listening to the New American Dream Radio Show on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And Revolution Radio is a listener-supported network. They deserve your support. So please head over to revolution.radio or freedomslips.com and look for the different ways that you can help out. You can subscribe to them on Patreon. I do that. You can do various kinds of donations. You can buy some cool swag. Just head over there. Do it. It's the right thing to do. Yeah. All right, then. Our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugia. Philip joins me each week, and it's in this section. Philip is a widely published columnist. You can find him all over the internet. He lived in Port Orange, Florida, which is not as close as it might sound, but he's a very interesting guy, a very smart guy. I appreciate him being here every week. I'm going to add him in right now. This section of the show is called It's the Empire. And I maintain a website for him called itsempirestupid.com. Hello, Philip. Welcome.
Hi, Chuck. How are you? How are you, Chuck?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Okay. Here's something for everybody to absorb. The real coup d'etat.
Hmm.
Now, obviously, what the Trump thumpers attempted to do on January 6th, 1 year ago, was a form of coup d'etat. Such actions should be met with every means legally available to our federal government. Imagine if those of us in the anti-war, anti-empire community, or those advocating Black Lives Matter, even attempted such an action at the Capitol building, there would be a massive killing field outside. Government forces would have opened fire like never before, and they would have been justified to a certain extent. Imagine the outrage by those very Republican right-wing elected officials, the ones who were cheering the riot last January 6th, if the shoe was on the other foot. They most likely would have demanded that public hangings be reinstated. Just imagine. Well, that was the essence of the attempted coup. Now, my children, sit and listen to this wise man about another coup d'etat, which I call the silent coup. Now, this type of coup has existed perhaps since we became a republic over 200 years ago. Unlike most of the industrialized nations, especially in Europe and Scandinavia, the super rich who have always run America created this charade of a two-party system. The names may have changed, but always they gave us, as Ralph Nader called it, Twiddledee and Twiddledum. Cause for this baby boomer, we as a nation have become more and more dumb. The chances of having viable third-party movements has become a thing of the past. It seems that each time that true progressive or true conservative political parties, as with this generation's Greens or Libertarians, once they start to gain momentum, the two heavyweights just gobble them up. Bottom line, as long as we allow any type of private money into electoral politics, third-party movements simply cannot compete with the power of the purse held by Republicans and Democrats. Not so much is it the actual hierarchy of these two parties, but rather the super rich who control them. Now, we are talking about super rich and powerful folks who make the super rich of generations past look like paupers. These people own and control corporate America to the point where rank-and-file elected officials must dance to their tunes. Now, imagine if we had complete public funding of all elected offices nationwide, from local to state to federal. Imagine if working stiffs decided to run and hold office on a fair playing field. How many of us would be able to actually govern? Now, here's the skinny on this. There are over 12,000 registered lobbyists working in our nation's capital. They exist because, in reality, elected officials listen to them. Why? Because they want the campaign donations that the lobbyist clients can send them. Now, with the system seeing no private donations allowed or used for electoral office, the only path to getting political support on an issue would be to bribe, a convictable offense. Now, the late Senator Paul Simon of Illinois told this story. He was on the campaign trail one day. When he returned to his hotel room that evening, he checked the many messages that were left for him. After reviewing the list, he said he began returning calls. Senator Simon acknowledged that the first person he called back on the phone was one of his regular campaign donors, the one who had given him the most. Sadly, he said, this was the reality of it, plain and simple. So you factor Senator Simon's anecdote in with the myriad of political action committees, many of which are funded by the super rich, and the right-wing think tanks, again, fostered money by the super rich, that have taken over our political landscape, and you have fascism. And the coup just strengthens. Thank you.
Thoughtful column, Philip. It's I don't know, the private funding is so ingrained, it's hard to envision a United States where there was no private funding for the
You're right. I remember 1996, I'm living in Indianapolis, Indiana, and the Capitol was there, you know, Capitol State. So I was part of a group, we were called the pro-activists of whatever, and, you know, we had some demonstrations, and one of the things that we were really into was public funding of elections. Why? Uh-huh. Because in 1996 in Maine, they passed a bill to allow clean election laws, it was called.
Really?
What it was, it didn't outlaw private money, but if a candidate running for office, if a candidate stated that they were a clean election candidate and would not take private money or spend private money, then they would get some public funding. You know, from the state. And it would be announced to all the public who was running as a clean candidate, who wasn't. And in the next cycle, which was, I think, was that year? It was either that year or maybe in 2000, I forget. But in the next election cycle in Maine, 32% of the people elected ran as clean election candidates.
Really?
That's pretty good, yeah. So we were at the state capitol. And Indiana was having a big committee to talk about public funding.
Yeah. Huh.
It was a committee. They had formed a committee private media people, political people, and other types. And they had this, it was a blue ribbon committee. It must have been about maybe 28 or 30 people.
Whoa.
And they had a hearing. They had a hearing at one of the big rooms. So we went down to the public and you could sign your name and you could speak. So I signed my name and the woman that went ahead of me was with, Common Cause of Indiana.
Okay. Yeah.
And she goes up there, and it turns out that she was a Democrat. I think her father was a mayor of a town or something.
Uh-huh.
She was a very nice woman, and she goes in front of them, and she says, "Thank you so much for letting me speak." And I turn to my friend, and I go, "What are you thanking him for? You're allowed to speak. You're part of the public." But anyway, she goes, and she's talking about the Common Cause, wants to have transparency and, all kinds of disclosures by candidates, financial disclosure of how much money they're taking in. But that's all she talked about. She didn't talk about public funding. So I follow her. So I walk up. I never forget this. So I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I said, and where I come from, the shortest distance between the two places is a straight line. So let me talk straight. I go, no private money in politics. Total public funding of all elections. And then I explain what the main law was, where if you can't have the law, then because you need a constitutional amendment because of Buckley versus Vallejo, 1976, which said that money was free speech. So money was free speech, so therefore you couldn't outlaw private money because of that ruling by Supreme Court. But the clean election law could get around it by the way I explained. So I make my explanation to the Blue Ribbon committee, and then they start asking me questions. So one idiot who turned out to, he owned a small newspaper, and he's giving me a hard time. We make our money from advertisements, and when there's elections going on, we make our money. So I said, listen, I said, there's a thing called the civic duty. I said, you have a newspaper. Maybe isn't it your civic duty to allow all the candidates a voice in the paper, when there's an election coming, and not the ones who can spend the money? So anyway, he didn't like what I had to say. Then this other guy, he starts asking me. He says, so what are you saying here? Are you saying that if I'm a rich man and I want to spend my own money for my campaign, that you're saying that I shouldn't be allowed to do it? So I'm calling him senator. I thought he was a state senator, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm answering him, and he's giving me a hard time, and I'm answering him. And then the thing is over. I finish speaking, and then they finish their whole thing. So I turned to my friend who was with the Hoosier Environmental Activist Council. He knew a lot of things about the state. And I said, who was that? I said, where does that guy represent? I said, what district does he represent in the legislature for the state?
Uh-huh.
He's laughing at me. He goes, Phil, the guy's a union. He's a union rep.
Ah.
He's with the AFL-CIO. Yeah, he was a union guy.
Oops.
Yeah. Yeah, because the unions want to be able to give money, but they're so stupid. They don't realize that they're outspent like 10-1 by the PACs and the rich. So then I'm out in the lobby. We're leaving, and these two reporters come over to me. One is from the local papers. One is from the Associated Press. Huh. And they said, "Can we interview you?" So first they interview the woman from Common Cause, right?
Uh-huh.
They interview her. Then they come to me and they say, "Can we interview you?" And they ask, "Who are you?" And I tell them who I am, and they're interviewing me. So the guy I'm with from the Environmental Council, the activist group, he said,
right.
"Hey, that's pretty cool, man. You're going to get in the paper." I said, "Hey, I'm going to guarantee you, tomorrow's paper, they're going to have her in there, but not me."
Right. Yeah,
I'm going to guarantee it. I'm not going to be in the paper. And sure enough, the next day, she was in the paper, and I was not mentioned at all. So, anyway. That's the reality.
You didn't have the popular opinion.
I was not part of the two-party system.
Yeah.
That's why we'll never have change here, because they allow money in politics, and it's a bunch of crap.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
This whole topic brings to mind one of Mike Palachek's books. This is, Mike was my former co-host on this show, and he's written quite a number of novels. One of them was called Joe Coffey's Revolution. And it's about a guy who decides to run for Congress. And he manages to get his name on the ballot in a rural western Iowa district. And then he gets out, you know, he's in the big rallies or whatever, where all the bigwigs are there to talk and see all the new candidates. And he starts talking about prisons and the military. And I'm not sure if he did the spending on elections, but yeah, it would have fit right in. You know, some of the voters start getting interested, but the, you know, the main politicians, they're like, oh, you know, the reporters turn around, you know, leave before he does his presentation. It's really a good book. It's, and very, sadly,
yeah, real. The way it is. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. And it's ridiculous because you got these third party, even Sanders, you know, he tried to do, you know, $25 a person.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Something, it's just not going to happen. It can't do it because look at all the money he raised, and yet he still, you know, they still kept him off the ballot, you know.
Yeah. And even in, you know, smaller scale elections, for instance, here in Fort Lauderdale a few years back, a friend of mine actually ran for the city commission. He had been on the commission before, but he ran to get on there, and part of his campaign was that he wouldn't accept any you know, private donations. He would only take the public funding. And well, he got trounced, basically.
Well, he got trounced because the average voter didn't even know it. They didn't even know that he said that. You see, if at least the papers, you know, look, it's unfortunate because down here, as you know, where you are too, it's the same thing all over the country probably. In these local elections, they don't have any real town hall. Debates or candidate forums where they can all, you know, be up there and to answer questions and to ask their own questions. It doesn't happen. It's that all they do is they get people to hold signs, right? That's what they do. They get people to hold signs, put them on their lawns, and you don't know anything about the candidates. You don't know what they really stand for. It's really, you know, it's sad. It really is.
Right.
I mean, you know, you would think that the local paper, well, first of all, we have no paper where I live in Port Orange. We only have the Daytona News Journal. It's one paper.
Right. Yeah.
But the way it should be is that the local paper, when there's an election, let's say for, you know, city council, in the paper, they should have each candidate explain on certain issues. Give their opinion about what they want to do. You know, I'm in favor of this. I'm in favor of that. I want to see that, and let the public at least, you know, open the paper, you know, and read. But it should be more than that. It should be the local radio stations.
Exactly.
The local radio station have all the candidates on.
There are a few. There are usually a few websites that have something like that, but they tend to slant it one way or another depending on what their particular agenda might be.
Yeah, and it's not only that, but a lot of people don't use the website. You know, if you want to get general public, I don't know what the answer is, but I assume if you want to get the general public, you have to do all venues. You have to do the, you know, local radio, you have to do a local newspaper, and they should have unfortunately a lot of people won't, but like a town hall, because I mean they could televise it. They televise the city council here. So they can do like 2 weeks or a month before the actual election, maybe, and not just once. They should do it like, I would do it once a week for like 3 weeks before the election. Have all the candidates that are on the ballot show up for the city council, right? And let them explain on certain issues that how they stand, and then let the public who show up there who or maybe could send an email or call in and ask questions and see where they stand on certain issues, you know. But you know, I mean, it's not. You know what it is. Here's what it is, Chuck. We our country has been so dumbed down. We are. Let's be honest. I mean, you and I are baby boomers. There's no comparison. I'm telling you the truth.
That's
true. Our generation and the one before us, compared to the ones now, there's no comparison. We're a dumbed down country.
We were educated. We were encouraged to actually think for ourselves, rather than being just following somebody's instructions blindly.
Or Twitter. And now everything is Twitter. Everything is Twitter or Facebook. Everything is electronic, and it's all tidbits.
And because of the way that the whole thing works, you mostly only see posts or whatever from people that agree with you. So then you think, oh, okay, everybody thinks what I do. And then, you know, something comes along and it's totally different.
It's almost impossible. With the way things are set up, I mean, with the way the media is so controlled by super rich people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, even the public colleges. The public colleges. 8 years ago, I had these two teachers from Daytona State College here ask me to come in to talk to their. There were three classes together in one big class. They wanted sociology. They wanted me to come in and talk about the 25% solution to cut the military spending 25% and send the money back to the localities according to what they paid in tax, right? And that was I was going to speak. So I went there and I spoke to this giant, you know, three classes together. I had one asshole, pardon my French. Some kid, he was ex-military, and he was giving me a hard time. But I handled him nice. I didn't get angry. But he was giving me a hard time on the cutting the spending and all that baloney. But basically, I made my points. The three teachers came up to me and they thanked me, and I said, "Hey, anytime you want me back, please. I'm happy to do this." Never called me back. I contacted one of the teachers. I left him a message. He never answered me. And I know what happened. They were given their orders afterwards. I mean, because the chairman of the department wouldn't even get back to me. They wouldn't even answer me. Why? Because they're controlled. They're controlled by the powers that be. They don't want people talking about certain issues. And one of them is the cut in the military spending. That's a taboo, man. That's taboo.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to defend ourselves against the terrorists, so you can't cut the military spending. They say.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
do they know about the 2007 Apache helicopter thing that got WikiLeaks famous and got him in trouble?
Yeah, right.
You know, I wonder how many kids know about that. Now, a lot of them should know because it was done through the internet, so people could have seen it, you know. But I wonder how many. I'm going to ask when I run into college kids. I don't run to them now because of the virus. But if I run into people that are students, you know, I'm going to ask each one. I ask, do you know anything about the 2007 Apache, the thing that was done through WikiLeaks? Showed it. Do you know anything about that? That the Apache helicopter attack
done through
Iraq?
The internet, so. People could have seen it, you know. But I wonder how many. I'm going to ask when I run into college kids. I don't run to them now because of the virus.
But if I run into people that are students, you know, I'm going to ask each one. I ask, do you know anything about the 2007 Apache, the thing that was done through WikiLeaks? Showed it. Do you know anything about that? That the Apache helicopter attack
done through
Iraq?
The internet, so.
People could have seen it, you know. But I wonder how many. I'm going to ask when I run into college kids. I don't run to them now because of the virus.
But if I run into people that are students, you know, I'm going to ask each one I ask, do you know anything about the 2007 Apache, the thing that was done through WikiLeaks? WikiLeaks showed it. Do you know anything about
what's
that?
What's happening here? What's going on here? I'm here myself.
You are echoing. I don't know what's going on. But we're about
I don't know what's going
anyway.
On, but it was
Thank
fun, Chuck. It was a good time. God bless you.
The virus. But if I run into people that are students, you know, I'm going to ask each one I ask, do you know anything about the 2007 Apache, the thing that was done through?
Well, that was a very strange occurrence there. But we are we're back to normal now, I think. That was a player that decided to play by itself. Sorry about that, folks. But we are back here. And let me just remind you, this is the New American Dream Radio Show. And we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio. So make sure that you support them. And even when we have an interesting technical glitch, we're still kind of fun to listen to. So, next half hour, we're going to have Abba Bird, who's a wonderful poet, and we always have a great time visiting with her. So that's going to be coming up really, really soon. And we're going to come to a station break anytime now. So I apologize for any technical glitches, and we got a good show going here. So just hang in here. All right, talk to you real soon.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
In the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law. You enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick. Welcome to the crypt.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Tapes. Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
All right. Our next guest of the evening is Ava Bird, and we're going to add her to the show right now. Ava is usually on the West Coast, but I believe she's somewhere in the Eastern time zone tonight, and she should be joining us any moment. Hello, Ava. Welcome to the New American Dream.
Hi, Chuck. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. You said something about being in an Eastern time zone, so you're over here on my part of the country, whatever.
Yes, I am.
All right.
How's it going in Florida?
It's going pretty well. Pretty much business as usual. There's been a little bit of there's been a surge with this thing, so some people are a little bit paranoid, but it's mostly continuing as usual.
That's good. Now, you guys have pretty warm weather there, even in the wintertime, right? Like you have spring-like weather?
Pretty much, yeah. Let's see. Today, I think it was 72 or 75.
Wow, that's great. You're lucky. So you're getting more sun, which means more vitamin D, which means people's immune systems are a lot more strong, which means a lot less people get sick.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the case?
It's still 68 now, just late at night.
Wow, that's nice. And then no humidity there in the wintertime, right?
Oh, it's still kind of humid, yeah.
No, is it really?
Huh. Oh, yeah.
So it's year-round humidity there.
There is year-round humidity, but because of the Gulf Stream, it doesn't get super hot in the summer. I mean, we hardly ever have a day over 100.
That's good.
We might get one or two a year.
There'll
be lots of 90s, but that's about where it gets to. And then in the winter, this is pretty typical. Every so often, earlier this week, it, I think, dipped down into the 40s or 50s. But that didn't last very long.
Do you ever miss the cold temperatures? A little bit of chill or a little bit of winter?
Not really. maybe, but not really.
Well, and you always get a chance to go somewhere if you I know you sometimes take trips and.
Yeah, I do. So.
So you get a little flavor of it.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, Happy New Year, Chuck. How is Lorraine doing? I've been meaning to ask you.
Well, she's doing pretty well. Her, her foot is still bothering her a lot. It's a lot of pain from that. But she's kind of getting used to it. We're having trouble finding a good doctor that will provide what she feels like she needs for it. But we're working on it.
Good, good. Well, I'm sure the warmth there really helps. It makes it, I mean, imagine doing that and then it being cold out, you know?
Oh, yeah, really, really.
So you're really blessed to be there in a place like Florida. And I know that.
I like it.
From what I understand and from what I heard is that your governor, DeSantis, is really not enforcing lockdowns and masks and vaccines. And is that right?
That's pretty much true. I mean, the masks are, most people will wear masks if they're in a group, a group inside at least. But it's not enforced too much.
Well, you are certainly lucky to be in the sunshine and you have the beach weather and you can go to the beach all year.
Yeah.
Right?
Course,
you can get in the water warm all year.
Of course, living here, you don't end up going to the beach all year. But
yeah.
You know how it is. You know, the only time you go to the various local attractions is when somebody visits.
Yeah, that's true.
The way we are,
Well, you get so busy with things at home and you have a lot to do. And, I guess we all take things for granted to a degree. You know, it's like when we living in the midst of all these things, it's like, and he's got time every day to go to the beach and lay in the sun and get in the water. I mean, that'd be great. But, we all have lives to live and things to do. We got, living under capitalism, you got to always stay on top of things.
Yeah, exactly. We have a tremendous rent increase coming up.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Now, do you think that's because of the... of all the people moving there, or is it just
you? Certainly has an effect, but I mean, basically it's because our landlord sold the building and the new landlord wants more money.
No. And are there laws in place to protect you? I mean, they can only really increase it.
No. This is Florida. We don't have those things.
Really?
Let me see. What's the percentage? I don't know. It's roughly 50 or 60%.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Darn.
Yeah. But it's in line. It's pretty much in line with the other rents around here. We had a nice deal, so we pay on time. We mostly fix our own stuff. We're not difficult to deal with. And we even kind of try to help out the other neighbors. So, the landlord had, not raised our rent for a long time. Now it's all catching up.
Well, I guess the person that sold it really saw an opportunity and wanted to just hone in, right? Before,
yeah.
I guess,
yeah. Well,
if you have a...
They had some health issues and they just decided to get out of the business.
Yeah. Well, and also it's like, he or they are at the peak of the market. And then if you have a hurricane or something.
Oh, yeah. And it was the right time to do it if you're in the business, that's the right time to do it. So.
Right. And then, you know, let's say you have some natural disaster and then there's some cleaning up for a couple of years. That could be the down market, and I'm sure he wanted to avoid that. So I guess for him, it made sense. But too bad you didn't get grandfathered in, you know.
Yeah.
Well, darn. Are you going to be able to stay there?
I think so. We're going to try.
Good.
I need to find more jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you're helping me with my book, and I plan on, you know, kicking you over some green for your work.
That's going to help.
Yeah. And I've been meaning to email you this for a while, but with the holidays and everything, I have a friend that she's another poet. She lives in California in Los Angeles, and she really wants to do her book, her poetry book. And, you know, it's like mine where all the poems are already written, and it's not like this really difficult editing process. It's, you know, she's spell checked and has it all laid out right. She just, you know, your expertise could come in really handy for her. So I'm giving her your information, and she's going to contact you. So, that would be another one. And I think you'll really like working with her because she, one, is a fabulous poet. Two, she's also a comedian. She and I have a lot in common. Yeah.
Okay.
And she's also, and here's a kicker, and you might be able to collaborate with her on some things. She is an amazing soul singer.
She is a
black soul singer, and you know, she grew up singing in church, and but she's transferred that, what she learned there, into, you know, singing her own songs, and she sings in soul bands, and you know, she gets gigs in Los Angeles, and I have seen her live, and she's really, really good. She's really a lot of fun to be around, so you'll enjoy meeting with her and working with her and hopefully helping her with her poetry too.
Yeah. Well, that I really appreciate you passing my info on for that.
You are always there to help me and have helped me a lot, and you know, our book is almost done, Chuck.
Yeah, really.
And then I'll be able to read.
I look forward to seeing the next things back from you so I can finish it.
Yeah. I did one round of edits, and then now I'm doing another round of edits, and it's surprising all the things that I missed on that first round. It's like, you think you got everything?
I've been there. That's the thing about editing. You see what you think is there instead of what's really there.
Yeah. Well, and also you can make the changes, and then you go back and then they weren't made. And you're just
that's frustrating, yeah.
Oh, man, I know that happened a couple of times. And, you know, there were things I really were glaringly, you know, obvious sort of, you know, I don't know if I call them errors, but like, you know, double... pages that were in there twice that I had put in there, and like I just happened to notice it, and wow, so I went and deleted it. But had I not gone over it a second time, I'm also going to go over it a third time. You know, and then because you don't want to release a book and then have all these errors and typos.
Oh no, of course not. You would be surprised at how many people do just that.
Yeah.
It's so much devaluing their work, you know, no matter how good it is, if you have a whole lot of errors in there, people are going to stop in the middle and say, okay, I'll move on to something else. I don't feel like reading this. Yeah.
I think for when it's your own work, you kind of get tired of reading your own work. You know, first you wrote it.
That's why you have
and then you put it together.
Yeah,
and then they can miss things too, you know. Sometimes I think, like with you, you don't always know if I've made it like that for a reason, or if it's a typo, or you're not always sure, so you don't want to just change it, you know.
I pay a lot of attention to that aspect.
You're great. You're a fabulous editor.
This is wrong. This needs to be this. No, I mean, there are
there are things I will do that for, but there are others where I say, okay, well, this is different, but this is her voice. This is what she wants to do, and I leave it. That's why I think editing is an art. You know, it's not just following rules. You have to know when you want to, you know, break the rules or have the writer break the rules or whatever.
Right, right. And, you know, it's like you have a really gentle and professional way about presenting things that it is very, you know, just honest yet, you know, considering the artist's situation of, you know, did they do this for a reason, or is it really something that they want to change, or should I point it out to them? You have a great way of communicating in that way, and I do recommend, highly recommend, to all the people that are listening out there, if you have a project, to have Chuck help you, because he does a fabulous job on so many levels and in so many ways, and that's just one of them. I mean, you're a great editor, and you're also great at laying out, and you're also great at graphic design and all the things, and then, wow, you know, you do the sound, and then you do the show, and you do music. It's like you have so many talents, and it's pretty amazing. So if anyone's out there listening and you need a project, I know for me myself, it's like, and I may have mentioned this on the last show, but it's certainly one thing to write a book, mm-hmm, but then it's a whole nother thing to lay it out. And often, yeah, you can't do it. For me, I couldn't do it myself. Like I have Microsoft Word. I could probably go in there and type it. But for some reason, I had this block, and I just couldn't lay out my own work. And then if somebody else does it, they often will do a better job than you're going to do with your own work, because they have this, you know, they're not going to, like, you know, trip over every little thing. And, oh, this doesn't look good, and I want it like this. It's like you can go in with just such fresh eyes and just make it, you know, plus you have the experience, and you are an editor, you are a publisher, so it's like, you're not like just, this is the first time you're doing it, and you're just guessing and everything. So it's just, I mean, it's worth it to pay somebody to do it. You know, there, I mean, I've definitely been through that before with myself. Like, I'll just do it myself. I'll save the money and I'll just do it myself. And then all this time goes by, and either you try to do it yourself and it just doesn't look good, and then you end up stalling, and then it just sits there when you could have just paid somebody. It's not even that much, and then they get it done a lot quicker than you're going to do, and then it's done, you know? So that's why I did that for a long time. I'm going to do this myself thing. And it would be great if I was able to go in with this non-judgmental attitude about my own work, but that's pretty impossible to do. I don't know anybody that's really able to do that. Maybe some people probably could, but when it's your own work, you just have this, you have a mental block about certain things about it, you know? So, and then you also appreciate people's work, you know, because you're a creative person yourself. So it's not like you're just this detached person and, you know, you don't really care about the work. You just want to, you're in it for the money and you just want to do it. It's not like that. It's like you really care, and, you know, you do a lot of, you've done a lot of books, and you have an intellect, and you have an intelligence that is at play too. So, and there's so many little problems that come up that you don't foresee, even this, you think you're going to do it yourself. And then it sounds easy. Oh, just go ahead and lay it out. It sounds easy. But then when you go and do it, and then you run into all these little things, and then it's like, it's just easier to send it to somebody and have them do it. And then, like you and I are doing, I do the edits, I send them back, you do, you know, and it's like the back and forth thing, and then it's done, you know? So, but thanks again for all your help, and you've helped me with my other books, and you're helping me with these, and I may as well, I've been meaning to send you texts and get in touch with you. I know with the holidays and the new year and things are busy and stuff, and you have the show every week, and it, you know, I know it's a lot of work and time and stuff, but
well,
I do.
Well, you have really helped me out on the show this week. You weren't scheduled to be on, and I really thank you for agreeing at the very, very last minute to jump in, since Jim Napolitan wasn't able to make it this month. So I really thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome, Chuck. I mean, I'm glad that you know that, you know, I'm here for you, and I happen to have been available. You know, sometimes it could have been
that lucky.
Yeah, exactly. And you just happened to get me at the right time. I had my phone there. It wasn't, you know, sometimes we walk away from our phones, or we take a nap or we're doing something.
Right.
You know, sometimes you can be making dinner and you can be playing a podcast or listening to a show. Texts pop up, you don't see them, or emails, they don't come, and then you start doing something else, and darn, you didn't see them. But I happened to see it right away, so I'm happy. I was happy to do it, and we ended up, you know, talking about some other things. I was going to share a little bit of a poem, but we started talking about something else.
We still have time. Why don't you share a poem with us?
Okay. All right. Well, before I do that, I wanted I started to kind of present this project to you that I've been meaning to email and text you about, but I know we're already working on a book. But this project that we're, you and I have, you know, worked on together with this cat piece, this cat book. I'm also turning it into a book too, and I and why not you? You know, I mean, here you have been the catalyst for helping to create it, being that from this show is what kind of gave birth to it. And then every month I wanted to come up with a new piece. And then my original vision for it was, it was going to be 9 chapters as in 9 cat lives. But, and I thought this nonsense would be over by then. You know, how long did you think this was going to last? You know, a couple weeks, maybe. And here, this nonsense is still going on. So, you know, I just had to let go of the 9 lives thing. I really was attached to it, you know, and I was going to double up on chapters and then maybe do some trimming. And then I thought, I want to keep it as it is. And, you know, and then that brings a whole nother job with editing and stuff. So I'd love for you to help me with that project, too.
Well, that sounds great, Av. I look forward to talking more about that. And let's see, maybe you should go with 9 squared. You can go with, you know, 81 chapters. So.
I know. It's like it just goes on and on. Eventually it will have to end, or I'll just have to, you know, either to be continued or just kind of end it, or think of a good ending to just end it with, you know, because also with poetry, you know, it's not like a regular novel where, you know, you have all these, you have this long sentence that takes up the whole line, and then, you know, you get a new sentence. It's like poetry, the line breaks are much shorter. So there's a lot more space. There's a lot more pages that are not long sentences.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to be careful of page count too.
Very different kind of a thing. I've done a number of poetry books, you know, for you and others, and it's a different mindset for the editor.
Yeah, oh, totally different. It's really different. Hopefully the thing about my stuff is that it's all, the way I want it is the way that I send it, meaning you don't have to go in and guessing game, decide where the line breaks are, you know, but I'm also open to, you know, feedback. This might look better, or just in the interest of space and things, like I was going to say, you don't want a big, thick, worn piece book either for a poetry book, because it's just, you know, pages and books and then weight and all these things. There's things to consider, you know?
Yeah.
So, at some point it'll have to end, but you know, that's okay too. It's like, I can still continue it and then maybe have a part two. And, you know, it's so fun to work on that. Like, I don't really want to end it because it's so fun. And it's like every month there's something else. And,
I love the cat series. there was a
lady that did a call for like virus poems. I'm on a poetry network, and you know, people will send out calls for submissions for poems and stuff. And a lady was doing a thing about the virus, and send us your lockdown poems. And she was having the same issue where, like, she thought this was going to end, and we could, you know, like, she had a book, and now we could look back and remember these dates. But it hasn't ended, so she hasn't. You know, the book isn't done, and she's like kind of stuck. Like, do I finish it or do you keep going? And So I have sort of the same thing. But, you know, that's something you can help me with, too, is like deciding this is a good place to end it, or you can do a part two and just have another book and, you know. So, but we'll work on that next.
Sounds good.
You know, but.
All right. You have 3 or 4 minutes left. Can you throw them in?
What I'll do is, because each of these poems are about, they're somewhere between 7 and 10 minutes. So I'll just start. And then when you just fade me out when you're ready to fade me out, and I'll just, you know, end. And
That'll work. And thank you again so much for being here with us.
Yeah, you're welcome, Chuck. And I hear we got off talking about other things. I was going to, but that's okay. I'm glad that we talked about this stuff. And for anybody that's listening, they know that, you know, what you do and to, you know, call upon you for your work, because it really is fabulous. And you get right on things. You're professional and you're a great communicator. Some people aren't great communicators when it comes to, you know, they might do good in one way, but their communication isn't good, or, you know, they're not clear. You know, there's so many issues in dealing with people, you know, like getting books published and stuff that, you know, can hang up a project. But I highly recommend Chuck, and I recommend you because I've had experience and you've helped me now with four. This will be my fourth book you've helped with.
I'm blushing here. All right.
So I'm going to read my piece from December. It was a holiday piece, so we'll go back a couple of months. And so again, this is a new month. You know, normally I'm on the first week, and this is, I guess this is the second week, but this is a series I started with a cat that is stuck at home with locked down humans and the experience from the cat and the cat's point of view. So here we still are. I can't believe they're still around. I expected the holidays to be better. I thought I would have the place to myself. I thought the neighbors were coming by every other day to drop dry food on the dirty floor for me and pretend they clean my shitbox, but they really only do it once the whole week. But I don't care, because I'm so happy to be away from the drooling cat.
Please leave your message for 424200433 4. Nothing has been recorded. Record your message after the tone. Simply hang up when done.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello, Tom. Welcome to the New American Dream. You are on the air.
Oh, good. I was worried there for a minute. I didn't hear you.
Well, I had forgot to turn the volume back on.
That does help. Anyway, you know, the last few years, you know, we've been talking about this story about the Pentagon and all these goings on with the military sightings and the military admitting that, you know, they were seeing things that they couldn't explain. Well, when I was, you know, researching the story, there were certain things that kept popping up in that story. And I had a lot of questions I wouldn't answer, you know, like, okay, you know, they're researching these UFOs. Who's really researching them? What group is really researching them? Because, you know, supposedly until like 2007, they didn't have an organization running. And then once they got it going, you know, who is really conducting all these interviews, doing all the research for the government at that time? Well, there's some information that came out within the last few months that points to who was really doing it. Also, it kind of clears up some confusion that was really created in this whole incident. In the past, I mentioned an organization called ATIP, which was the Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program. That supposedly in 2007, this is the group that was established to go out and do investigations into this particular subject. Well, some information has come out to light that really there's confusion there, that there's actually another organization that was being created by the government, another one of these great government acronyms. They called it AWSEP, which basically goes into advanced weapons and so forth. that money was approved, and this is where that $22 million that we've talked about in the past was kind of appropriated, that this group would actually kind of divvy out and basically subcontract other people to do their work. Well, this group was headed by an individual by the name of Dr. James Lekaski. He was a ballistic missile expert. He was also specialized in intelligence. When the money was approved back in 2007, that, you know, they got from Harry Reid and his cohorts, that got approved, Lekaski was put in charge of this program. And what they did is they put out a government contract, open for bids, that basically they were looking at kind of like weaponry, like 40 years in the future, and future technologies, make it to be more exact. Well, that money got approved. They also put out the things for bid, and who was awarded the bid but Bigelow Aerospace, which goes under the term of BASS. Well, Bigelow Aerospace coincidentally happens to be in the same state as where Harry Reid was, the late Harry Reid, who got the money appropriated. And I kind of thought there was a connection there, but it seems like there's much more to it now. Well, when the money was appropriated, they also put out objectives on what they wanted this group to accomplish. And all this, by the way, is available on the internet. You can actually find the original proposal for the contract out there and what they were looking for. And it doesn't say specifically UFOs, but when you read between the lines, that would be kind of included in the areas of research. Well, BASS got this contract. And what they started looking at was, number one, setting up a database. They wanted to get a mammoth database set up of all these reports which had come in over the years. They were looking at things from military pilots, civilian pilots, civilians, government employees, every place they could actually attain information from, they were going after. And they basically acquired like 11 databases, mammoth databases, and put them into like one group. And they started developing essentially artificial intelligence to start looking through all these cases and kind of classify them on how to kind of consider them on, like, on a scale from like 1 to 10. The ones which were extremely interesting to them were ones which had physical effects on people after they happened, psychological effects, and also physical effects. They were contacting these people. And again, not all the cases most likely stood up, because I heard of somebody in my region where BASS had contacted him. He thought this was highly unusual. He thought he was special. He thought, well, he thought he was an alien. That's a whole nother subject on there, Chuck. But in this case, they were just really following up on the information that they had. Well, some of these people had physical effects, and they tracked these people for several years after this incident. They were following up, doing like blood samples, getting like MRIs done, getting all this information from their doctors, following up on their conditions. In one case that they investigated, there's an individual driving down a road out in, I believe it was Idaho. They're driving down a road in Idaho, the witness and his daughter in a car, and they see these orbs off to the right-hand side of the car. These orbs are kind of like dancing around, kind of like following the car. Then all of a sudden, they zip towards the car. Two of them kind of come through the car, go across the dashboard, and they're like baseball-sized orbs. One of them comes back around and goes through the driver's left shoulder. Huh. Goes to the left shoulder, comes out the right side of his body, and then it's gone. Huh. Well, the next day, he had sunburn effects on his face from whatever this was. His hair also started falling out, and it appeared to be effects something like radiation from whatever this thing was. They followed him for several years as far as researching this case, following up on blood samples, following up on the physical effects that happened to him. And from what they could kind of come up with is something kind of attacked his immune system of his body, is all the best they could figure. But it was one of these cases that came from this event. Well, then they had other cases they started looking at, Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, other ones related back to physical effects. Mm-hmm. And one of the places that they were looking at is a place that they termed as kind of like a lab. The lab was Skinwalker Ranch, that one that you sometimes you may see in the TV series on television. Well, huh. Bigelow actually owned that ranch back in the 1990s.
Really?
When this money was appropriated, he still owned the ranch.
Hmm.
So what they did is when Lukaski came in, Bigelow got the contract. They started going through all this information, going through data mining, setting up databases, everything else. They also got interested in the Skinwalker Ranch. Lukaski had read a book on it, put out about it, also had been circulating, I guess, through the DIA, this book.
Huh.
And people were saying, wow, if these weird things are going out there, UFOs are being seen, weird creatures are being seen, maybe we should look at this because maybe it's an issue of national defense, but also, you know, the government. Maybe there's a way we can exploit this for military purposes, you
know? Yeah, that sounds right.
There we go, you know? So what they did is Lukaski himself actually went out to the ranch.
Hmm.
He's out to the ranch. He's in an old ranch house with Bob Bigelow.
Hmm.
And he's looking at Bigelow has his, like, I guess, back to the kitchen. Lukaski's looking out that direction, and he sees this tube-like thing, this bent tube, almost looked like a muffler pipe, bent around. That was kind of like yellowish. It's hovering in the air in the kitchen.
Wow.
He's looking out this thing and watching this thing, trying to figure out what this is, because here, this guy's basically a rocket scientist in a sense. He's also done, you know, intelligence analysis, and he's seeing this thing floating in this room.
What?
And he can't make sense of it. Well, he's watching and he's watching and watching. All of a sudden, the thing just, boom, is gone. It completely disappears, Chuck.
Whoa.
And he's like, whoa, we got to check this out more. So that really, I think, piqued his interest in this ranch. Besides all the things he'd heard that was going on out there with people seeing orbs, with people seeing other objects. So what they do, they sent out some, actually former military personnel. They had three individuals who were in the military, had been in conflicts. So, I mean, you would think somebody who's been in conflicts, somebody who's very skilled, would be extremely good to send out to a place like this because, you know, they'll probably maintain their composure if they come into something unusual.
Hmm.
So one night, Chuck, they sent them out on this ranch. A couple of them are walking down a road. They're going down this little dirt road out towards one of the outer buildings.
Okay.
And as they're going down this dirt road, all of a sudden, the temperature is 55 degrees. It drops down to 55. 20 degrees difference immediately.
Huh.
And they're like, whoa, what happened here, you know? Well, of course, it starts getting them upset. They get a little bit leery. They back up. It goes back up 25 or 20 degrees.
Huh.
They come back a few feet forward. It drops 20 degrees again.
Wow.
And they did this back and forth multiple times.
Hmm.
Well, it freaked them out so bad, they left. They went back. I mean, they turned
can't
around.
Can't blame them, really.
Yeah, well, I tell you what. I haven't been with them. Well, they backed up, and they left. They started getting really nervous. Also, there had been orbs sighted out on this ranch, almost like softball-sized orbs, blue orbs, various colored orbs on this ranch.
Wow.
But when they left, this is where the next part of the story really picked up. They go home, 3,000 miles away. They're all from, like, the East Coast.
Hmm.
They get back home, and one of them is laying in bed one night, and he reports this figure in his room that's like a shadow type figure, almost like some sort of paranormal activity in his room. They flip the lights on, nothing is there. Well, his wife later on is by herself. She looks out a window and she sees a figure standing on two legs, but it has basically the body of a wolf.
Huh.
It's not human.
Wow.
And she says it looked at her and had this extremely menacing looking face.
Huh.
And when it runs off on two legs.
Whoa.
Not four. Well, she sees it. Their son also said that he saw a black figure in his room that was like standing at his bed looking at him. The son also sees the wolf at another period.
Huh.
The same type of situation where here's this like 7 foot tall wolf standing looking at him. And of course, the kid gets freaked out. But not only did this guy have, you know, a situation where his family had things pop up like this, the other individuals also had situations of things popping up.
Hmm.
And this is where they started developing the term after this happened, the term hitchhiker. They said it almost appeared that these military personnel who had been out there, something attached itself to them when they left. And whatever it went with them. And not only went with them, but it also migrated somehow to the family members.
Hmm.
So, I mean, this is a whole different side of this whole thing. They'd also been seeing the orbs and so forth like the other ones had seen. So BAS, this organization, wasn't just looking at UFOs in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking at all this paranormal activity associated with these events on this ranch. Cattle mutilations had been reported out there.
Huh.
As a matter of fact, they even tried to get Indians to come on the area, and they said they wouldn't because of the maybe superstitions attached to this whole thing that they knew about for years, going back to the Skinwalker itself. So it made me really look at this whole story from a different angle. Then when he looked at the individuals that Bigelow had hired in their group, a number of them, they were investigators, researchers, but they had a high number of also medical personnel, extremely skilled in what they were doing. So they were really looking at not just the UFOs, the physical type of craft. They were looking at what happened with these interactions on this ranch, these physical effects and what was going on after that. So, I mean, this is just an extremely interesting case out there, Chuck, on what was happening with this Skinwalker Ranch. Yeah. And the more I got into it, I mean, I started getting some books on this thing, and I kept reading everything I could. I mean, the number of cases and stuff that they came across. They said potentially right now the database they put together is one of the largest collections of UFO reports ever.
Hmm.
And the organization I'm with, MUFON, actually made an agreement with them for about 6 months or 9 months that they're acquiring information from our database, which was fairly substantial.
Hmm.
And they were data mining stuff, looking for correlations. But what I thought was interesting not long ago in the recent government report, the recent government report said they don't have a database, that there is nothing there. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm looking at this other report from the guy who ran the program, Lukaski, and also the guy who ran it for Bigelow. It says, no, we had one of the biggest databases ever, and we passed it on to the Defense Department.
Huh. Well, of
now,
course.
Something else. Well, yeah, and something else was popping up with this.
Mm-hmm.
They also had people showing up at individuals' houses after they'd had, let's say, encounters, and they were looking for information. And it kind of goes back to that old Men in Black type of thing, that the people would show up, they wouldn't identify who they were. They just seemed very rigid, I guess you could say. We want this information. We want this information here. And maybe mention the fact that, okay, don't talk about this in the future. Well, one of the guys happened to take a picture of a license plate of one of the vehicles that they were driving. And it come to be that when they tracked down the license plate, it said Homeland Security. And they couldn't get the information from. They couldn't get the information from, in this case, normal channels. They actually had, had to pull a lot of strings to get the information, but it ended up being Homeland Defense is where it came from. But I thought a lot of that stuff was getting really interesting, especially when you find out of what all they're digging into. As a matter of fact, their databases, Chuck, they were getting stuff from the old Russia. And they were having all this stuff translated in English. They were getting stuff from South America, from the southern South American countries. That stuff was also being translated back into English and so forth on there.
It sounds like a pretty massive database.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, they were looking for, a lot of it goes back to physical effects. Now, also at the same time, what they did is this ranch, they were developing specialized equipment with monitors on it. And again, it's kind of questionable what all they put into it. But most likely these monitors were going into all various types of cameras. They were going into different, most likely technologies, most likely Geiger counters, other types of detectors for electronic fields and so forth. In that short time when this program was put together, they developed these devices, and the idea was they're going to have these things transported to where occurrences were happening within like 2 days. So they wanted these devices out to monitor everything. But you had a incredible program put together in that short time. Now, also they mentioned that when the program basically, it ran for a couple of years. In this OSAP program, they went by a nickname of ATIP. They called it ATIP just because the OSAP name, they didn't want to leak out that it was actually a top secret program. This was at the Defense Department, the DIA. The Pentagon also was running one at the same time, or slightly afterwards, with the same ATIP name to cause confusion. And this was a lot of stuff that was printed in the newspapers on there. But they wanted to basically turn everything over to, you know, the Defense Department to keep this program running, but their funds ran out. And it was basically turned over to the government, and then that's where it was basically left. But to me, it sounds like they had one heck of a start, especially when you look over everything they did in like a couple of years. But to me, after I heard this whole story, it made me think twice about one of the things I keep saying almost all the time is, I want to take and go out to Skinwalker Ranch, and I'll help investigate. Well, if they've got giant, wolves walking around out there,
maybe staying home starts to look better, doesn't it?
Because I'm going to think about that, because one of the initial stories that came out was after the one individual bought that ranch. Again, they'd been seeing unusual activity out there, but he bought this ranch. He had this idea of bringing out these prize cattle onto the ranch. So he's out there with his son, and they've got a calf in a pen, and they see this huge wolf come walking up, and they said this wolf was bigger than any wolf they'd ever seen in their life. It comes walking up. It's like appears to be friendly, tame. They thought maybe it belonged to a neighbor or something like that. They didn't know, you know, whose it was. And this thing comes over, and all of a sudden it lunges and tries yanking this calf out through the pen. Well, the son runs in and gets a 357, and you know how powerful a 357 is. He hits it from point blank range several times, and it doesn't go down. Finally, after several shots, it lets go of the calf and starts walking away like it wasn't even hit. So the son goes in, and the son gets a 30-06. So now you've got some serious power, and they start chasing after it. They actually hit it, and it keeps wandering and walking away, starts running off. they try to catch up with it. Wow. They can't catch it, and all of a sudden you just find the tracks that just kind of disappear.
Huh.
And they never find any evidence of this thing.
Huh. Amazing.
But that was when they moved there and they saw things were going to go kind of go sour pretty quick after they got there.
Yeah,
range.
Right? That's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Getting a little dangerous, yeah.
That's it. Well, eventually Bigelow sold the ranch off.
Uh-huh.
And the new guy is actually doing a similar thing. Now they've got the TV show promoting things, but I thought it was much more interesting to see stories coming from the guys who actually ran the Pentagon or the program for the DIA and ran the program from Bass directly on what they were really looking at.
Wow.
And the thing that, again, appears that what they're really looking at is the side dealing with physical effects on people, whatever these objects are. And also these things that they called hitchhikers, that when these people left the ranch, it wasn't just these, but it was also multiple other ones, including Bigelow and some of the other ones that had things that appeared to go with them after they left. Wow. Almost like something is out in that region. Who knows? Maybe it's portals. Maybe it's interdimensional. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I thought that was a really interesting story this month.
Really? That's
not the only one in the country.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's actually rumors of up to about 12 more.
Huh.
I knew of one down in the Missouri area. There's another one I've heard mentioned over in Pennsylvania that have similar things going on, all this weird paranormal activity, Chuck.
Huh.
So who knows? Maybe the government, they've been digging into those too, and we just don't know about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff. Thank you so much, Thomas.
Oh, no problem.
I'm glad that your health is returning. Hope that you get better and better. We missed you last month. And I really look forward to hearing from you every month.
Yeah, I miss doing it too. I mean, I really did. I really look forward to doing it because I enjoy it. But
well,
last month was just one of those things that when you get heart conditions, and then here's the other thing: when the doctors come out and say, "Well, you need to take this medication, which is at $500 for 30 day supply."
Oh man!
If you don't have a heart problem going
that's
in,
a
you
cool
will have
show.
To hear how much.
It's an hour show,
yeah, right?
And it's at 10 o'clock.
Wow.
The inaugural Laugh Force. This is a show
for people
that have been in the military or people that are their family was in the military, they're comedians. And I've got Ken.
God, it won't stop. Maybe it did. Sorry about that, Tom. And sorry, listeners, these things happen when you try to look at another window. My apologies. I thank you very much, Tom. That was
really interesting.
And listeners, thank you for being here. I hope you'll be back next week and every week. I apologize for the technical glitches, and I'll try to do better next time. And I really appreciate being here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Remember, it is listener-supported radio, and they do deserve your support. So thanks for being here with me, and talk to you next time. All right. This is Chuck Gregory from Fort Lauderdale, the New American Dream Radio Show, signing off for the night. Talk to you next time. Good night.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what...